So I have a little story I need to share with you, and like some stories I tell, I just need you to remind you beforehand, you're on my side in this, okay? And now you'll see why here in just a second, okay? When I was about 12 years old, I woke up one morning to get ready for school, and I walked from my bedroom into our kitchen, and I walked into our kitchen, and something was different on this particular day. My sister, Jenny, who's like 7 years old at the time, was up. And she wasn't just up and in the kitchen, which was kind of shocking enough because she's the late riser in our family. What was also shocking is she's at the kitchen and she's borderline wailing right now or sobbing at something that's happening. And because I'm such a kind and compassionate and tender-hearted individual, I reached around her to get into the cupboard where our cereal was. And I pulled out a box of cereal and I began to, pour my bowl of cereal for breakfast. I turned on the little mini TV in our kitchen so I could watch Scooby-Doo like I always did before school. And Jenny was crying so loudly, I had to actually turn it up a little bit so I could hear over top of her, screaming and crying and all this stuff. And I got about 7 or 8 seconds into watching Scooby-Doo, and Jenny, through her tears, is like, "Do you want to know why I'm crying?" I thought the answer was pretty clear at that point that I was going to say no, but I verbalized that for her to make sure she understood, which was not greeted very well. And so she began to cry all the louder, and she yelled out through tears, "Bubbles is dead." And then she ran out of our kitchen and upstairs into my parents' bedroom, surely to try and, engender some sort of, deeper, more significant punishment for her horrible older brother. Now, fast forward about 45 minutes or so, and before we're getting ready to go to school, we're getting ready to have a brief little fish funeral here in our ground floor bathroom here in the Blackburn home. And I don't know how this happened. Somehow I got selected to deliver the eulogy. I didn't quite understand how this happened, having not done any eulogy before, let alone a fish eulogy. I peppered it with, the greatest hits that you want to hear in any eulogy, probably at my eulogy will be said one day, which is, "Dad, this is really stupid. Dad, why are we here doing this? Dad, this is a really big waste of time." Yeah, really compassionate, tender-hearted phrases. And then we sent Bubbles off into the, great beyond that was the Columbus drainage and sewer system, and never to be heard from again. Now, again, I just remind you beforehand, you're on my side, right? You're stuck with me, right? I need you to be on my side here. That was probably, honestly, the first real, I mean, real in quotes, experience I can remember having as a kid with grief. Growing up, I kind of had a charmed life in that way. In later years, maybe not so much. But grief is a really big, difficult, vicious thing to deal with. And oftentimes when we think about grief, we usually think about it in the context of like someone dying. We think about it in the context of, getting a sympathy card or a wake or a funeral, something like that. And certainly that can be something we grieve. But grief isn't just that. Grief is the emotion that accompanies any sense of loss that we have, right? You can grieve the loss of a job. You can grieve some financial thing you'd always imagined happening that never really materialized. You can grieve the fact that you had this vision for what the lives of your children or your family would look like, and it doesn't really look like it's going to materialize. Those are all different kinds of things that we can grieve, right? What's interesting is grief is a super, super powerful emotion, and the loss that we feel is really, really powerful. If you ever took a psych class in high school or college, you probably learned about this thing called the Kubler-Ross model. And the Kubler-Ross model is better known as the five stages of grief. And does anyone know what the first stage of grief is? Denial, exactly. Yeah, denial. That what we've discovered psychologically is you and I are hardwired, not just emotionally, but also in a sense physically, to actually reject the feeling of loss. That is actually so hardwired into us that really smart psychologists, doctor people have been able to study individuals and find out that every single person at some point is going to experience grief, and then they're going to experience kind of the denial that comes with that. Denial is a powerful, powerful thing, and you can imagine when we are in the series of white noise messages, we're talking about different ways in which we use noise in our lives to kind of keep unpleasant stuff away. Like, hey, that's a perfect scenario for white noise to enter into our lives. I've seen it enter into my life. A couple of years ago, when I was a pastor in Chicago, our church had two worship services on Sunday morning. And a couple things that happened in our church. There was this really big falling out with a key leader in our church. And sadly, a lot of people had left our church. And then the time following that, one of these worship services that we had on Sunday morning was just becoming an enormous drain on our resources. It was something that we had to find the volunteers to staff each week. It was a really bad experience when you walked in. Like, literally, you would walk in, and the service would be chock full with five people. I mean, I'm not even making this up. You know, kids, like, the kids' ministry area was like a wasteland. If you walk back there, you'd see, like, a tumbleweed go across or something like that. It was just not a good idea. Any normal person would say, hey, we should probably cut our ties on this, and we should consolidate these two environments. Well, I wasn't a normal person. I was a grieving person. And what happened is, despite the fact that the people who worked on my staff, despite the people who are like key advisors in my life and wise people I turn to, despite the fact that all of them were like, Wes, you just need to cut your losses. You just need to, like, you know, turn it in, man. Like, this is not defeat. Like, this is just a wise thing for you to do. Guess what? I have my reasons I'd trot out, but deep down inside, the real thing was, hey, I was grieving. Like, things weren't working out the way I'd hoped. I'd always had this vision for what our church would look like and, you know, how I'd kind of lead us and see these great things happen. And when that wasn't happening, I was feeling a real sense of loss. And because I was feeling a sense of loss, I started to live in denial. I started to fill myself with some white noise, right? And all of a sudden, I found myself in a place where I was willing to use any financial resources or physical resources or energy resources or leadership. I was calling in, you know, anyone I could. Because my ego couldn't take the sense of just admitting defeat. Grief distances and divorces us from reality. And because it does that to us, it robs us, I think, of the life that Jesus wants us to experience. Today when you walked in, you had those little cards on your armrest. I'm going to ask you to go ahead and take one of those in your hand. And what I'm going to ask you to do this morning is I just want you to write on that card something right now, a loss that you are grieving. Some of us, it's going to be a 10 on the emotional Richter scale, right? It is a one-time, you know, one-of-a-kind kind of relationship that I'm grieving. Maybe some of you got some really bad health news, and you're grieving that right now. Some of us, hey, we're working through abuse and trauma that comes from that. For some of us, it's going to be a low level on the emotional Richter scale. It's something that's a little more than an annoyance. For many of us, I would imagine it's somewhere in between. You know, we're grieving something about our kids, or we're grieving something about just happening in our life. We're grieving friendships that we feel like have been maybe seen better days. Maybe you're even grieving the fact of, hey, I've been a part of this community, and people I love or people I've been a part of this with for a while, hey, they're not around anymore. And I'm sad about that, okay? That we can grieve a number of different things. But I want you to kind of listen to today's message through the framework of that grief that you feel like you're experiencing, in part because I feel like it'll help us process some of what I'm going to say, but also because, you know, step one in overcoming grief is that I have to own it. I have to own it. The first step in me overcoming my grief is that I would own it. Today we're going to look at this ancient Jewish text, 2,500 years old. It's in the Bible. It's this document called Lamentations. And Lamentations isn't a book we look at very often because it's actually really, really down and depressing. If you are feeling not so great today, probably don't want to go home and open up Lamentations because it'll kind of make you feel kind of down in the dumps when you're finished reading it. But Lamentations is an ancient document, and it was written by this guy named Jeremiah. And Jeremiah was a prophet, not a bullfrog, in case you're wondering. And Jeremiah, when he wrote Lamentations, he's writing in the midst of a lot of grief in his life. Jeremiah was a prophet that was sent to Jerusalem and to Judah, the nation that Jerusalem was the capital of. And he had the same kind of message that you see Old Testament prophets have all the time, which is basically, hey, you're a big bunch of sinners. You need to turn from your sin or else. And Jeremiah said that for 40 years, like all the prophets before him. No one listened. Everyone kept on sinning. Jeremiah got persecuted and hurt. And eventually the or else came. And in their case, the or else was that in 586 BC, the Babylonians laid siege to the city of Jerusalem. Now, we just kind of hear that and we think, oh yeah, laid siege, like the city was conquered. Okay, that's true, but siege warfare was its own rough animal. In siege warfare, what would happen is you would surround an entire city with your army, and nothing would come in and nothing would go out. And so what that meant is over just a couple of months, the Babylonians bled the city dry. Right? People would slowly starve to death. They would die for a lack of water. We have actual accounts in antiquity of ancient cities where this had happened, and people would actually turn to cannibalism. We had parents that would like eat their children, right? Because things are so desperate and so deplorable. Think about the condition. I mean, I'm sure Jerusalem in the 6th century BC probably wasn't like a great, you know, sanitary place. Can you imagine being stuck in a city for like 3 or 4 months of your life where there's like no sanitary services in or out? How deplorable and awful that would probably be. That's what Jerusalem went through until they finally raised the white flag of surrender and said, we're done. And so Babylon carted all these people from Jerusalem off to either become slaves, to get thrown into prison. And then about a month later, just to give like a big middle finger to the nation of Judah, they burned the city of Jerusalem to the ground. And that's basically their way of saying, guys, you're never coming back. This is over. We are the captain of the ship now. Right? We're in charge now. You're with us. And you can imagine that the ancient people of Jerusalem were pretty crippled with grief. And so Jeremiah writes this document, Lamentations, to basically express his grief. And what I think is really interesting about this document is when Jeremiah writes it, each chapter is actually written in this form where it's like a poem, and each line of the poem begins with a different letter of the Hebrew alphabet. It'd be kind of like if you wrote a poem and you started, and the first line started with A, and the second line started with B, and then C and D, and so on and so forth. And the reason I share that little fact with you is because I think Jeremiah wrote Lamentations that way because he wanted ancient Judeans to be able to memorize his words and to use them as a template to process their grief, to process the loss that they were going through. He wanted this to be a tool in their hands that could help them. And I think it is still a tool offered to us by God to help us move through loss today. Jeremiah begins in the first couple chapters, you can read them for yourself, owning it. Like he just names, God, you know what happened, I know what happened, things are not good, and he just starts to let him have it. We're actually going to pick it up here in Lamentations chapter 3, where Jeremiah says this. He says, I am the one who has seen the afflictions that come from the rod of the Lord's anger. He has led me into darkness, shutting out all light. He has turned his hand against me again and again all day long. It starts to read like a My Chemical Romance song or something right now. He is down in the dumps. He is depressed. He is worked up right now. Jeremiah, you see, starts to show us that the next step after owning grief, the next step in overcoming grief is to grieve it, right? To let what's on the inside come outside, to let what resides in us to find expression outside of us. I have no doubt Jeremiah expressed that to his friends and family and people around him. But what we can see in Lamentations is Jeremiah also expresses that to God. We see a small example of that here in chapter 3. If you continue reading in chapter 3, you're going to see Jeremiah give a lot of vivid detail on how he feels. Jeremiah talks about feeling like God has shot an arrow through his heart. He talks about how God has lied in wait for him like a bear or a lion and attacked him. Jeremiah at one point says, God, I feel like you've made me chew on rocks and break my teeth. Like, this guy is like hurting badly. At one point, Jeremiah, he uses this image of God walling him in, which was particularly bitter because remember what happened to Jerusalem, right? They were walled in. They were shut out. You know, like this is particularly snarky when Jeremiah says that. But he is just finding a way to grieve, to express his anger, to express his frustration, to express his disappointment. Sometimes we feel like we need to shut all of that inside of us. And I have the great news of letting you know that the God of heaven and earth, the God revealed to us in the Old and the New Testament, is a God who can take and handle your grief and my grief. Faults, flaws, warts, anger, frustration, whatever. He can handle it all. Because for thousands of years, we've kind of seen in his word these prayers of people who have been working through loss, and who are angry, who are frustrated, who are afraid. Maybe sometimes people who just feel numb. God can handle it. And if you're kind of in here feeling like, man, I just need to be a good Christian, I need to hold it down, or however that works for you, I'm here to let you know, hey, that's not the case. God invites us to bring those feelings of loss or fear or loneliness or whatever it is that we have before him. Jeremiah continues on. In verse 19, he kind of keeps letting God have it. But he says, the thought of my suffering and my homelessness is bitter beyond words. Jeremiah isn't just homeless in the sense of like he doesn't have a home. Like his whole city is destroyed, right? And Jeremiah says, I will never forget this awful time as I grieve. He is still in the middle of this over my loss. But then he starts to turn. And that's actually where I want us to focus a lot of our time today. He says, yet I still dare to hope. And Jeremiah here in Lamentations 3:21 starts to make a turn where he says and shows us that the final part of processing grief is for us to, at some point, begin to leave it. Grief is a good place for us to visit. It is a bad place for us to live. Right? It's okay to feel broken up over loss. That's human, right? It'd be weird if you didn't. But God has not designed you and I to live in a place where we are constantly shackled and ensnared by the loss that we feel. God's hope and desire for us is to move forward and express confidence in him to provide the grace needed in the midst of grief. Jeremiah continues on, and what we see is he finds that confidence by reminding himself about who God is. He says, I still dare to hope when I remember that the faithful love of the Lord never ends. His mercies never cease. Great is his faithfulness. His mercies begin afresh each morning. I say to myself, the Lord is my inheritance, and therefore I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who depend on him, to those who would search for him. Jeremiah, I imagine, as he writes these words and as he prays these words, is not praying them from a place where he's going, yeah, I'm totally feeling this right now. Woo, yeah, woo, mercies are fresh. Yeah, you know. I think as Jeremiah is saying these words, he is reminding himself of their truth. Sometimes in our lives, what happens is we allow what we feel to drive what is true. I would encourage us to allow what we know to be true drive what is true. And what is true about our relationship with God, what's true about our relationship with anyone, in fact, is oftentimes we're going to find ourselves wrestling with loss or pain or disappointment or grief. And what can be really important in those moments is I don't let my feelings dictate what I do. I let what I know to be true dictate what I do. And what Jeremiah is saying is, God, I know I can look throughout our history and I can see points and places where you provided for us. God, in a weird way, even what is happening right now to Jerusalem is, in fact, kind of a strange way in which you are proving yourself faithful to your promise to us. I mean, God, I spent the last 40 years saying if people didn't start following you, a bad thing was going to happen. And this seems kind of like the bad thing that was going to happen, you know, like you kind of foretold this. Jeremiah probably had personal experiences he could talk about. Well, what's important for us to recognize is Jeremiah is kind of reminding his heart, he's reminding his soul what he knows to be true about the fact that God is in control. This is so important as we move forward through grief. A couple of years ago, kind of going back to that incident, right? We had this leader who's a part of our church in Chicago, and he just got really miffed about something that was going on in our church. And honestly, is not a very important thing. And he just got really frustrated about it. And instead of kind of working through that in a helpful way, he kind of did like all the worst horror stories. Some of you probably grew up in churches where stuff like this happened. and kind of started to build this little cohort behind the scenes, right, of, you know, kind of striking up stuff against our church, against me personally. You know, now we live in the age of the internet, right? And so there's stuff on the internet that's not true, or it's deceptive, or it's inflammatory. We'd sat down to try and have a conversation. You ever have a conversation with someone where within like 30 seconds, you just know, we're never going to really see eye to eye on this kind of thing. Like this, we're going to reach a stalemate. This is kind of a waste of everyone's time here. And we'd had one of those conversations, and man, I was just crushed. Because as kind of pastor of this church in Chicago, I loved our church. I loved what was happening. I've been a part of this place since day one. And all of a sudden, overnight, a place that I loved and was the highlight of my week and of my life, now I dreaded walking through those doors every Sunday morning. Because I wondered what was going to happen. I wondered, man, what's going to come up now? You know, like, you ever have that feeling? And I would walk out on a Sunday morning when it was all over, and I just kind of feel another sense of dread because I would know, hey, it's only like 160 hours before we have to do all this over again. I don't know that was said this way, but I think why I was grieving the loss of a place I loved. I knew things were not going to be the same, at least not for a while. And that hurt. That was hard. I saw a counselor and started to, you know, talk to him about it. His name was Matt. He's really nice, really helpful. And eventually, as I started doing that, as I started talking to people who know and, you know, care about me, I kind of arrived at this point where I figured out if I'm going to find closure, I need to say I'm sorry to this person. I've told you guys this before, but in every conflict, there's never a 100-0 conflict, or very rare is there a 100-0 conflict, right? We could draw a pie up here, and every time if we have a pie that represents all of our conflict, we always own a tiny piece of the pie. And I'd kind of figured out in my life, you know what, I don't think I own much of this, but I think there's maybe a little 5% sliver that I need to own. And so I decided I was going to write this guy a letter and just say, hey, I'm sorry for this and this. And I wasn't going to ask for anything in return, right? I was just going to say, hey, man, I'm sorry. I blew it. I want you to forgive me. And so I did. I sat down at the dining room table in my house. I pulled out my computer. I typed up my little note. You know, I wanted to make sure I got everything just right. I proofread it for, you know, 79 times to make sure all the words were just right. And then I copied it down onto a piece of paper. And I stuffed that piece of paper in an envelope, and that envelope sat on my dining room table for, you know, I don't know, a week. And eventually the day came where I knew it was time to send away the letter. And so I read it again. I don't know, like I was thinking like the words were magically going to change. Or I'm not sure what I was ready for. I decided it was time to send it. And I will never forget that moment in my life. It was a Wednesday early evening, probably like 6 p.m. It was a beautiful day. It was you know, sunny, 75. Brittany and I weren't married yet, so I was going over to her house afterwards to hang out. And I drove up to the post office in our neighborhood. And I drove up into that area, you know how they have that big 24-hour post, you know, that 24-hour mailbox right there, you know? And so I drove up, and I pulled up right next to the mailbox, and I just put my car into park. I just kind of sat there, and I thought about all the stuff that had happened in my life for the past 2 or 3 months. I thought about all the stuff I was grieving. I thought about all the stuff I was feeling. And after a couple minutes, I tossed up a quick prayer to God. I don't even remember what I said, but what I do remember is I rolled down my window, and I opened up the door of the mailbox, and I put the letter inside, and I kind of forced my, you ever have like that thing where you have to like force yourself to like let go or something? Like I had to force my hands to like let go, and I watched the letter tumble into this mailbox. And I drove away. I will go to my grave with the image of watching that little letter go into that mailbox. Because what I knew is I drove away from the post office in Griffith, Indiana on that day, was that was my decision to say, I am leaving it. I am not going to let what is happening to me have ownership over me any longer. It was a decision in my life, kind of like in Jeremiah's life, to say, God, I know that you don't promise us a wrinkle-free, pain-free, problem-free kind of life. But God, I trust that over time, you honor people who decide to honor you. And so right now, at this moment in my life, God, this is how I feel like I need to honor you. And so I'm just going to do that. I'm going to let you take care of the rest. We have moments in our lives where we're going to be challenged to leave grief behind. And oftentimes they find a root in what do I believe about God? Who do I believe that God is? Jeremiah finishes up his little diatribe here with kind of what almost feels like an aside comment, but I feel like it's so important. He says, so it is good to wait quietly for salvation from the Lord. Now think about what Jeremiah is saying here. Jeremiah, your entire city was burned to the ground. Jeremiah, you're saying it like that was good? Like you're looking back on this and you see it's good? It is good for people to submit at an early age to the yoke of the Lord's discipline. And we just kind of think, good? Jeremiah, have you ever like, do you need a dictionary, man? Like, do you know what that means? Do you know what that entails? And Jeremiah's saying, listen, I learned something going through this I never would have learned otherwise. Jeremiah is voicing a principle that I think we all know is true, but we need reminded of oftentimes, is that crisis and not comfort is what often yields growth in our lives. There are things I believe God could and will and would only do in my life through the crucible of difficulty. And I believe the same for you as well. And I believe that's part of what makes grief and how we work through loss so important. Because they're the things that God uses to shape and to form our character and we and our followership of Jesus. The big idea for our day to day is simply, hey, it's good to grieve. That's a holy, that's a right thing to do. But eventually we need to leave. Right? Grief is a place to visit. It is not a place to live. And so today I want to lead us through being able to walk away as best we can from loss today. Say what has happened to me or what is happening with me is not going to have the final word on me. When you walked in today, I had you fill out that card earlier today. Our worship team is going to come forward here, and we're going to sing a hymn. It's a song that many of you, if you grew up in church, you probably recognize. But we're going to do something in the room today that I hope will be a powerful next step for us. You picked up that card earlier. You wrote something on it. And I'm going to give you three options for something to do here today that I want us all to take part in and participate with this morning. Option number one is this. Some of you wrote a grief down on that card, a loss down on that card. And what I want you to do today, if you're ready, is maybe for you, kind of like me sending that letter away, that today could be the day when you decide and you say, hey, I am walking away from this grief. I am making a decision right now to simply say, hey, I'm wrapping a bow on this grief. What's interesting about loss and grief is it's kind of like getting your driver's license, right? You make this one-time trip to get your driver's license, but then for the rest of your life, you have to kind of keep renewing it, you know? And walking away with grief is the same thing, right? We make a one-time, I think, big decision to say, hey, it's time to leave this behind. But then we kind of have to keep making successive decisions to live that out. And when we leave grief behind, what we're not saying is, hey, these memories don't matter. What happened is okay. And we're not saying these people don't matter to us. What we're simply saying is, hey, I am not going to let this have ownership over me any longer. And if that's where you are today over the course of this song, I just want you to take that card in your hands. I just want you to rip it up. If you want to get some extra emphasis, you can like throw it on the floor. You can stomp on it. You know, you do what you got to, okay? But I hope for you that's like a physical thing, kind of like me sending that letter. That's a statement to say, hey, I am leaving grief behind. But I know for many of us, that's not where we are. And And so that's where option two comes in. You have a second card on your little armrest there. And if this applies to you, here's what I'd like for you to do. I'd like for you to take and write that same grief on there. And I want you to hand that card to someone you trust, to ask them to pray for, to help you process through your grief. It could be someone here at our church, someone in your community group, someone you serve alongside. It could be a friend or a coworker. It could be a neighbor. It could be a family member. I just want you to hand that card to them as a symbol of, hey, I am walking. I'm not walking through this alone. Hey, I'm still processing this, and I want to invite your prayers for me as I process that. When you're ready to walk away from that, kind of like the first group, and when that time comes, rip that card up. Let that person know you ripped it up. Some of you in this room, you might receive a card today, and my challenge to you would be, hey, right there on the spot, I just encourage you to pray for that person. And you might kind of feel like, whoa, I don't know. Well, some of us don't get paid to pray like you do, so I'm not really sure about that. And let me tell you, eloquence is not the thing God cares about when you and I pray to Him. Right? That's the heart. And I would just encourage you, be a part of that person's journey in doing that. While we sing this song, if you want to, hey, get for a seat, go to that person, hand them the card. Like, sooner is always better, I think. There's a third option. I recognize for some of us here today, you kind of feel like, hey, Wes, I don't have a person like that in my life. I feel like I could entrust that to. Or maybe the thing you wrote down is really, it's really big, it's really scary. You're not really sure that's something you feel, hey, I get that. I would encourage all of us to try and reach out to her. I just think that's a good thing. But if that's not where you are, as you exit today, at all of our exits, right here as you walk out, up by the elevator, if you go out upstairs, there's just a little red bucket. And as you walk out today, I just want you to drop that second card in one of those little red buckets. And myself and our two other leadership team members of our church have volunteered to say, we're going to pray for those things expressed this week. Because again, in the kingdom of God, no one should grieve alone. And this is hard enough for anyone to walk through. Man, we should not be going through. What do we believe about God? Right? When God says He is a comforter, when God says He is a healer, when God says He is a helper, this is how we activate that in His life, in our life. We trust Him to do what we can do. We lean into the community He's placed around us to enable that to happen. And we announced ourselves and to the world around us, man, we are not going to let loss have the final word on our lives. Grief's a powerful thing, but so is leaving grief behind. So is the decision to say, hey, I'm not going to let this have the final word on me and on my life. So today as we walk forward, today as our team sings, I invite you, hey, you can stay seated, pray through, think through, fill that card out, think about what you need to do, ask God to help you do what you need to do. Sing, you can stand, do what you need to do. But it's my hope today that we might be able to take a step forward towards saying goodbye to grief. Let me pray for us. Father in heaven, I thank you that you have promised to be a comforter and a life giver and a helper to us. Help us experience that now. Help us take the steps that you're calling us to take. Help us to do the things you're calling us to do. And God, I pray in the most enormous way possible that we might experience your power to be a comforter, a healer, and a helper that meets us in the midst of loss, pain, sorrow, grief. Holy Spirit, we ask you to do what only you can do. Pray this in Christ's powerful name.